And this segment, we are talking about Dos Vatos Locos y Poética. It is an event, a potluck with poets and open mic that's happening this coming Saturday, the 18th of December in Chupadero. I'd like to welcome Paul White. He is the organizer of this open mic potluck event, and Israel Aros and John Davis and poet Chuck Calabrese will be joining us in just a few minutes. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hello.
Hi.
So, Paul, tell us about this Poetry at Paul's potluck poet. That's a lot of P's. potluck poetry stuff. You do basically poetry events at your house in Chupadero?
Yes, I've been doing them for the last 8 years or so. I started them with a poet who was in the Santa Fe area, Gary Glazner. And originally I saw Gary doing a series similar to what he helped me set up at the Inn at the Alameda. And I was very impressed with the poets that I saw there and the venue, and I wanted to do something like that in my own home.
So what is it that makes it what it is? Not only the reading, but the ability to socialize, or?
Yeah, there's a potluck, and then there's the featured poets and an open mic, and it's generally it's a really nice crowd of people, poets, writers, poetry appreciators. You don't have to be a poet to come. And people get to meet book publishers there and learn about other poetry events.
John Davis, you are not only a poet in your own right, and we had a wonderful program not too long ago in which we talked about one of your latest books, but you also are the, what would you call it,
the
inventor
manager
of a lot of other poets.
That's true.
How does that work?
That all began when I discovered a poet named Fernando Pessoa, the Portuguese poet, who was not only probably Portugal's most famous poet during his lifetime, but he was also six other well-known poets. He wrote as what he called heteronyms. And if you read the accounts of his heteronyms, he was overcome by these personalities. He didn't plan it, usually, according to him. And then he would start writing in these other voices, and some wrote in English, and some wrote in Portuguese, one wrote in Latin. They're still trying to figure out exactly how many poets he was after he died. He left these papers. And
did people think that it was different people?
It's hard to say. Yeah, the accounts aren't very clear on that.
But in other words, in the anthologies of Portuguese poetry, do you have some of his heteronyms listed?
Yeah, you have them, yeah. And they started movements and argued with each other in print, and it was a whole world he created.
And so you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, I hadn't planned on it either, but I have been for... Well, I've kind of narrowed it down to three or four now, but there have been about 20 different characters that I write as and publish as.
The whole question of artistic inspiration is something that we've talked about on this program many times and that you can talk about until the end of time, but this thing of letting poems, letting art, letting music flow through you and being more like the facilitator than the inventor of this, when you're not you, but you're Chuck Calabrese or one of these other people, does the process work that way also?
Yes. For example, if I'm going to be Chuck, I mean, sometimes I decide to be Chuck. Sometimes I start writing and I notice that I am Chuck this day. And it's a different way of writing, a different way of approaching the sounds of the poem. So they unfold in an entirely different way. Rarely is he entirely serious about anything. And if he is, I usually take that poem back. And there's probably four poems in my book that Chuck actually wrote in a somber mood. So I took those back.
It must give you a certain kind of freedom to be able to do that, because Chuck or whoever can write really outrageous things, and it's not really John Davis who's going to take the brunt of it.
I haven't been held responsible for anything yet. it's not me. He's a different person. He's a totally different set of values. Not totally different, but largely different. And the same with other characters. You know, they have different emotional tendencies, different set of values, different ways with language. So
different genders.
Different genders, yeah.
Races, the whole thing.
Races, everything, yeah. So that's what I did.
How is this... In your view, it makes one wonder, how is this like and not like multiple personality disorder? I guess it's not a disorder.
I can control it, I think, so far. We'll see.
It's not a problem, in other words.
Right, yeah, I'm not being treated for it now.
We're talking to John Davis. Chuck Calabrese is going to join us in just a few minutes. Anything else that you want to say about Chuck as a kind of introduction before we meet him?
I think Chuck will speak for himself.
Well, Chuck is getting ready and John goes to tie up and take care of his pit bull, why don't we turn to Israel Aros, would you like to start straight in by reading some of your poetry?
Sure. Caught me off guard with that, but and kind of to add to what I'm realizing as John's speaking. Oh, hey, I have the same disorders, but for me, it's also a gesture to my community back in East Los Angeles to not only use forms like spoken word form or popular form, but really try to venture off of different forms. So there's always different cadences, and I notice, okay, this is a totally different mindset coming in right now, you know, and watching those different cadences. So this first one is about Facebook. It's called Facebooked. I thought these were real things on Facebook. A friend and heart-shaped boxes, collections of sage and chocolate on my wall, a video kiss, a poem slipping into your computer RAM, another note seen into your wasted computer eyes. My screen goes blank with you. You, the one that never reads any of this, because you're my friend, Keno. Mary Charlotte, aren't you my friend? Didn't I meet you here by fate, by destiny? Didn't I interact the most I've ever interacted with anybody through this interface? Through this faceless wall? Through our metaphysical chat? Didn't we form our bond in the universe? Isn't this why they made this thing? So we could become real friends? Oh, do I want to get together for coffee? I really can't meet you for café. I have to meet up with Emiliano Zapato's long-lost cousin tonight. I have a Facebook date with him around noonish till midnightish or so. We're going to plot a totally revamped evolutionary tortilla y frijoles marketing campaign to save the barrio. And we'll run for president at our local cultural y café con leche center. It will be the model for the next 7 generations to follow. I'll post it on your wall later, Mary. But I gotta go now. I love you.
Israel Aros. Gee, without even knowing me, you put my name in. That's wonderful. Now, you're from Mexico or you're from East L.A.?
I'm from East Los Angeles, which sometimes gets referred to as Little Mexico.
And so you write in English, Spanish, Spanglish, kind of moving easily mm-hmm. from one language to the other and being very creative within that.
Yeah, and also Nahuatl and some Lakota, picking up again on the cadences of the neighborhood, you know, and how you grew up and how you talk in one space and the next space, you know. When you're inside a classroom, you're taught formal English. When you're outside, you have another code. So it's code switching. But ultimately, like I said, when I was talking about being able to give that back to my community, that you don't have to sacrifice one over the other, that it's all part of your musical ensemble.
What is the poetry scene like where you're from?
It gets mixed reviews as everywhere I go because I tend not to be inside of one genre or one way of
of looking at the world, because although I grew up in East Los Angeles, I've had the privilege, which very few get, to be able to venture off and go to UC Berkeley and venture off and go to, get an MFA program, which was all part of a whole other story. So because of that, I tend to entertain different languages at different times, different spaces.
When you talk about bringing poetry to your community and doing it in service of your community, I always wonder, how does poetry, in a big way or a small way, affect communities that are dealing with some of the serious social pathogens that we have in this nation?
So right now, with SB 1070, and as I work with the Adelante program, which is homeless youth in Santa Fe. And even in Santa Fe, we're seeing an influx of what's happening with stuff in Arizona. We currently have over 1,100 students registered in our program, some of them coming from that space. And with that, we also have an opportunity to educate other people, because we currently have Fathers in Focus and other people trying to help us do a poetry workshop with these families that we work with every week to illustrate how important it is to tell their stories, especially when you have xenophobia and SB 1070 in effect, and the mayor of Santa Fe saying this can be a refuge. So then we say to those people that come here, speak those stories. And if I don't give them an example of the multitude of ways of how to speak those stories, then they have nothing to go with. And sometimes I use 3 or 4 words in a poem. Sometimes I get, I make up words, to then again say, it's all fair game. Your literacy, your illiteracy, your what you know is important, valid.
Mm-hmm. There is great importance in telling one's story for the purpose of getting it out, articulating it, having it be heard. And then the next question is, who do you want to hear it? Your family, your community, the mm-hmm. dominant culture that doesn't have any idea and is often, I would say, willfully ignorant of mm-hmm. what is going on, two doors down.
Mm-hmm. I said I want everybody to hear the story. And, I have sometimes people say, I really like your poems, they're so soft. But then you get, you start talking about the world and politics, and it just doesn't jive with me, And so I always find that, then I did my job. If I can sneak that in there in a lulled voice or in a funny voice or in a really dramatic voice, always changing the voice, because my audience is the children and the abuelitas and everybody in between, because the children are going to educate us in the future, so I have to provide something for them. I'll speak the same poem to them, which they'll find really hilarious, because I'm using the word border, border, border over and over, and sticking everything in between, zebras, tortillas, revolution, Juarez, and they're laughing away. And then I'll tell that same poem in a totally different setting, and there's this I don't want to hear that, but it's sounding kind of nice. So,
right. Yeah. I think it's, I don't have any answers for this, but it's something, because the kind of multicultural movements in which people are trying to get their stories heard, and Black American literature has been some of the finest literature that our nation has produced for many, many, many decades, going back to the early 20th century, and still to this day, there is this kind of, I don't want to hear it, or that's too rough for me. Mm. I don't know how one addresses that.
I think there's always going to be and that space where people don't want to listen to what's going on, but It's always up to the privilege. That's why I consider myself one of the privileged now to be able to speak. I'm not middle class, but I have opportunities that are only available to middle class now because of where I work, my degrees, and then being able to provide those same tools to my community. I mentioned earlier before we were even on the air that I have a $300 recording device. You know, that's a tool that...
Sitting at this table right now.
Yeah, that most people in my community do not have access to. So I want to be able to give that back to them, but also show them that you don't need those tools. Sometimes I use Sharpies to make these elaborate drawings, and Sharpies is often used in my community to deface property. So I use that very same tool to ignite creation, to ignite change in both the mentality and what can be done, because a lot of that times when they're defaced, what is considered defacing it, it's an artistic expression. It's not being able to have the voice, the space to do that.
You are both a poet and a visual artist.
Yes.
So Israel Aros is part of Dos Vatos Locos y Poetica, which is happening at Poetry at Paul's this Saturday at 1:00 in the afternoon. It's a potluck. And we are being joined now by Chuck Calabrese. Welcome.
Well, I didn't know I was going to be here, but I guess I'll do what I can.
And where are you from, Chuck?
Well, you know, I'm from just about everywhere. I don't like to reveal my specific location because you don't know who's going to show and knock at your door. If I had a door, they would knock on it.
Would you like to read a poem?
Yeah, let me see here. It is actually, you know, not only am I a poet, but I'm also a journalist, and I write a lot of news, and I recently discovered how Americans like their poetry. I took a survey, and this is how Americans like their poetry. 17% scratched into men's room stall. 8% read to them in monotone by wheezing American lit prof. 14% acted out by hand puppets. 12% recited to them by lariat twirling cowpoke. 9% recited as part of used car pitch. 12% uttered breathlessly at team building workshop. 9% snorted into camera by WWF tag team champs. And 19%, by far the largest percentage, chanted rhythmically by daring, taboo-shattering performance poet Angelique. Angelique's going to be there, isn't she? On Saturday, I think, maybe.
She's coming with you?
Well, she doesn't actually like to be seen with me in public that often.
How did you get into poetry?
The bigger question is how to get out of it, which I haven't figured out yet.
Well, I mean, what's a guy like you doing writing poetry?
I have a lot of time, basically, and a pen, and occasionally some paper.
I read that you're founder of both the Tourette's School of Poetry.
Oh, yeah. I am, yeah.
And Chuckismo, exclamation point.
Right, and it's important to note that exclamation point. I wanted to have one on each side, but I couldn't figure out how to do the first one. But I think it's the only poetry movement, and somebody can disagree with me, that actually includes an exclamation point. And that's a marketing tool, of course.
Does the poetry that you write and the performances that you do kind of help you in your relationships with the ladies?
Well, yeah, I am the world's foremost expert on failed relationships, and my poetry goes a long way towards assuring that I continue in that role.
Could you perhaps read a poem that illustrates that dynamic?
I'm writing a book. I don't have it with me, but luckily it's short, and I can probably remember the entire text of it. But I'm writing a book on. It's called Relationship Dynamics for Men. And I thought it was going to be like a big self-help book, like a lot of pages and a kind of a hefty cover price. But it didn't work out that way. So basically now it goes like this. Relationship Dynamics for Men. It's two words. The first is incommunicative. And that's when a man won't say what he feels. And the second word is inappropriate. And that's what he is when he does.
We're talking to Chuck Calabrese. What's your relationship to the poet John Davis?
I sometimes appear as John Davis just because he seems to be more popular with a kind of a mainstream poetry thing. And so I sometimes appear as him. It's not very interesting, but it's another gig. He seems to be very successful, which is a little upsetting to me, but I have my own, what's that French word? Niche. I have my own niche.
Does he help
you? I don't have a niece, but I have a niche.
Does he help you out?
He will probably, if I'm lucky, give me a ride home today, and that's pretty much all I can expect from him.
So, do you always travel with your pit bull?
You heard about my pit bull. I think it's...
John's
think,
holding it outside the building.
I know, and I wish him luck because it hasn't worked out so well lately. But, every poet ought to have... Israel, do you have a pit bull? Everybody...
No, but you're actually making me think about it. Maybe I should get one. It's good protection.
Yeah, especially if you're going to say anything controversial, and
that's
apparently
true.
You are, so...
Israel, you've got a... website, waterhummingbirdhouse.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
What's the significance for you of the hummingbird image?
The hummingbird in Nahuatl is a representation of the sun. So when it represents the sun, that's the winter solstice time. This is just one meaning of it, but what it is the sun is still very powerful, even at that, what it's considered the weakest point. Another thing that the hummingbird represents is truth. So that whenever you have a hummingbird visit you, you should really be paying attention as to what you're saying, thinking at that moment in time. So there's just some immediate things that the hummingbird comes to mind as far as, and then the water. You know, there's a lot of talk of oil right now, but the reality is that we're in an era where water is being sold to us, where water rights are being considered, where water is a commodity, and water is life. So we're saying we're charging for life. So those are some of the things that I want people to think about.
And people can find Israel's poetry by, well, going to the website and clicking on the links that I will have on SantaFeRadioCafe.org, but also Googling Water Hummingbird House.
Yeah, and then also on Facebook, again, talking about giving back to my community. Over the last 2 years, I've been working on a poetry series called Love in the Time of Obama.
Right. And you can hear some of your work live, which is mm-hmm. great. If people don't make it out to Chupadera, they can still hear you online.
Yeah, and it's intended, again, to give back. And really, it's a manuscript and a work in progress as this time, which is considered a very sacred time, is evolving. And one of the things that my elders told me is that there's seven loves. And all they said to me was that, they just said, there's seven loves. So the work is trying to engage in what that means is community love, partner love, familial love, environmental love. And really, in this time that seems really heavy with war and destruction, it's like, how do I engage in that? I'd say with weapons of mass creation.
Nice.
And try to engage others to do the same when it feels like everything's collapsing.
Paul White, are you a poet also?
No, I'm not a poet.
So you like to just give people a voice in your house?
I very much enjoy poets and poetry, and I like the sort of intimate space that having these events in my house creates. And it's always a good time that we have there. Even though it's a little bit out of town, it's a beautiful drive. It's going to be in the middle of the day around 1 o'clock, starting at 1 o'clock. I also wanted to mention that, about a couple of months, 2 or 3 months ago, I saw Israel and John over at El Farol. Monday nights they have Poetica at El Farol starting at around 7 o'clock, and it's a great venue. And when I was very impressed by both of these poets. I thought they had something in common. I was looking around for John after he did his reading, and I looked back there, and he vanished. And I saw this other guy over there, and he was kind of dressed funny, and he looked a little intimidating, so I didn't want to ask him where John was. But afterwards, I kind of put two and two together, and that's when I realized that I had to...
You were dealing with Chuck Calabrese.
Yeah. I had to invite both of them. One doesn't seem to come without the other, so... So that's... I just wanted to let people know about El Farol, Monday nights.
So this is Dos Vatos Locos y Poetica, and it's... If you want to find out the phone number and location, all that kind of stuff, just go to a computer and Google Santa Fe Poetry and Prose, and that is on meetup.com. You can find it there. Just poke around a little bit, or also go to my website, santafe.radiocafe.org. And Israel Aros will also have chapbooks for sale, and the proceeds from those sales will go to the Adelante program for tutoring and eviction prevention. And I want to thank you all, Paul White, Chuck Calabrese, and Israel Aros, and outside the building, John Davis. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Oh, it was good to be had.